friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. We're now 37 days away to the opening ceremony for the Tokyo Olympics in Japan. Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with one Tokyo-bound athlete who has made history for Nigeria.
Hello, my name is Uchiake, and I am the first Olympic gymnast for Nigeria. And it feels amazing. Like, I finally turned my dream into a reality. And, you know, it's hard to believe it right now, but now that I know that I'm qualified, I'm going to give it all I got, you know?
What is the process that led to your qualification? And who sponsored you to the qualifying event?
As far as sponsorship, I wasn't really sponsored, but I was wearing Terns gear. So I guess they technically, like, an unofficial sponsorship for my uniform, my leotard. But as far as the process to the qualification, you know, like, I was practicing at the University of Michigan, training every day with the team, and it just felt great just to be back at home, just training with everyone. And then right before I left for the competition, I went back to my home gym and trained with my coach, Adam, and he helped prepare me for the competition, my last days I had left in America.
What is your expectation at the Tokyo Games, being the first Nigerian gymnast to compete at the Olympic Games?
As the first Nigerian gymnast to compete at the Olympics, my target is to, you know, make finals, because I can't just jump to conclusions saying, oh, I want the gold medal, I want the gold medal, which obviously I do, because who doesn't? But, you know, there's steps to it. So my goal is to make finals on my best events, which are pommel horse and the horizontal bars. So right now I'm preparing to increase my difficulty so that I can get a final and higher score.
That's Uche Eke, who will be Nigeria's first gymnast to compete at the Olympics. The 23-year-old Eke qualified for the Tokyo Games after winning the bronze medal at the recent African Gymnastics Championships in Egypt. And Uche spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from the U.S. state of Michigan. As we heard Uche say, he trains at the University of Michigan, where he is a graduate assistant coach for the men's gymnastics team.
Yes, sporty greetings. This is three-time Olympian and Beijing 2008 Olympic medalist Chika Chukwumerijie. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Team Uganda will travel to Japan, hoping to end a 9-year absence from the Olympic medals podium. Uganda's last medal came at the 2012 London Games, where Stephen Kiprotich won the gold in the men's marathon. As Ugandan distance runners prepare for the Tokyo Games, they say they're looking at Joshua Cheptegei, the world record holder at 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters, for inspiration. Magume Davis Rakawinj tells us more from Kampala, Uganda.
Athletics fans cheer up long-distance runners at Mandela National Stadium, Nambole, as seasonal runner Ronald Msagara beats 10,000 and 5,000 meters world record holder Joshua Cheptegei in a 1500 race. Cheptegei says he chose the medium distance race so he can improve his speed.
This is my first race of the fast track race of the year, and I chose to run in 1500 to test my speed as a part of the preparations for the Olympic Games. And, you know, at times it gets more exciting and no one wants to lead the race. So you have to get some knowledge and some mechanism of trying to win the race, even if it is a slow race. So I chose 1500, and I wanted to, of course, come back to run from home, because I really missed running at Nambole, and I wanted to inspire the most of the young kids here who always watch me and they always run here in Nambole.
Ronald Msagara, who's ranked fourth in the world in 1500 meters category, says beating Cheptegei, no matter the race, is a no mean feat.
When you talk the name of Cheptegei in the world, everybody fears him. So coming here to compete with us is really a big advantage on like for example, is me. You know, Cheptegei is a guy of record pace. And whenever he's rapping, you see, the pace he was also chasing is was record pace, 55. So it's very hard. Running with him is really advantage to me because I'm checking up also my body, checking up my time for Olympics. You know, all of us, we are yearning for Olympics. So as today, putting 336 is not bad because I've never run here 336. This is my first time. I've been always running 340 here. Then I go outside for my competition. But putting 36 is a really blessing, it's a advantage to me, it's showing I'm moving somewhere. Yeah.
Young runners here, such as long-distance runner Rogers Tibet, believe by training alongside Cheptegei, they become better runners.
The way Cheptegei is shining, that is a king track, king of the track. So we shall be the ones. That's why we encourage him more further, that let him break records aside, that for us we shall be keeping our records within the country. By 2024, he will be going to marathon. Then we shall be to guard the records around. That when someone is trying to take away, we shall be the ones to return it.
3,000 meters steeplechase runner Dennis Cheprotich agrees. He says he's learning a lot from Cheptegei.
He's just a living kind whereby he can at least gives you enough advice, purposely in the areas of training. Yeah, yeah. Where you are weak in the side, it tells you to at least make it. Yeah.
Uganda's athletic medals at the Olympics have come from short distance races, including Jonah Kibwas, who stunned the world when he rose to gold in 400 meters hurdles at the 1972 Summer Olympics in Munich, setting a then world record time of 47.82 seconds, despite running on the inside lane. Sprinter Orgot Thathis says he has what it takes to emulate a Kibwa.
So I'm here to better my time and improve my ranking in IWF. I'm just looking forward to the under 20 games and qualifying for the Olympics as well, but my main focus is to qualify for the under 20 games, which will be in Kenya. Yeah. National records, and to break the national records, the 100 and the 200. And I believe our sprints have greatly improved. So I'm sure that in the near future, even the sprints and the short distance will also compete in the IWF and world competitions.
Kenyan sprinter Mark Othieno Odhiambo also came in to fine-tune ahead of the Olympics, just like other elite runners from South Sudan and Rwanda.
Our sprinters really need more of race sharpness, and I really thank God for this year, because we are trying to stretch ourselves, just looking for small meets, especially this one. And in Zambia, I like the performance. I did my personal best, 10-1-1.
Namai Mawerere is the spokesperson for the Uganda Athletics Federation.
We had some qualifiers 2020 before the postponement of the Olympics. At that time we had 23 qualifiers. But being that it was in the 2020 season, we want them to confirm their performance of 2020. That's why we have organized these competitions for them. And we expect some of them to hit better times, and we expect others to qualify for those championships. And at the end of the day, as a federation, we have to meet to select the best.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume Davis Rakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the latest top stories of the week, including President Biden's European trip and his first face-to-face meeting with Russian leader Vladimir Putin in Geneva. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
Thanks, Kim. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In African football, Sierra Leone beat Benin Tuesday 1-0 in Conakry, Guinea, to clinch a berth at the Nations Cup Finals for the first time since 1996. Kai Kamara scored on a penalty kick in the 19th minute after a handball from Benin's captain Khaled Adenon. The Nations Cup qualifier was postponed twice due to COVID-19 test issues, and it was moved to Conakry after the stadium in Freetown was ruled to be not up to international standards. A draw would have seen the Squirrels of Benin through to next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon, but it's the Leone Stars of Sierra Leone who advanced to African football's premier event. And with that result in Conakry, the field is finally complete for the 2014 Africa Cup of Nations, which kicks off on January 9th, 2022 in Cameroon.
Sporty greetings, this is Victor Osimhen, Super Eagles of Nigeria and Napoli FC forward. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
In action Tuesday at the European Football Championship, France defeated host Germany 1-0 in Munich, while Portugal scored a 3-0 road victory over Hungary in Budapest. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Portuguese superstar Cristiano Ronaldo, who set the record for most career goals at the European Championship. He scored on a penalty shot in the 87th minute and then added another goal in injury time in Budapest. Ronaldo now has tallied 11 goals at the European Championship. Cristiano Ronaldo also became the first man to play in 5 European Championship finals, having made his debut back in 2004. In Munich, an own goal by veteran German defender Mats Hummels gave the French a 1-0 victory. In the 20th minute, Hummels tried to stop Lucas Hernandez's cross from reaching French striker Kylian Mbappe. Hummels diverted the ball into his own net with his shin. Speaking after the match, Germany's head coach Joachim Löw said he can't fault Hummels, adding, and I quote, "It's just bad luck." The Germans are 4-time world champions, and they had never lost an opening game in the group stage at the European Championship. Meanwhile, several fans were treated for injuries in Munich caused by a protester who parachuted into the stadium before the game. Debris fell on the stadium and main grandstand after the parachutist hit wires for an overhead camera attached to the stadium roof.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In National Basketball Association playoff action Tuesday night, the Brooklyn Nets beat the visiting Milwaukee Bucks by 6 points to take a 3-2 lead in their second round series. The Nets got a sensational triple-double performance from Kevin Durant, as we hear now from the AP's Dave Ferry.
James Harden was back in the Nets lineup, but it was Kevin Durant's triple-double that led them to a 114-108 win over the Bucks. Durant carried the Nets on his back, delivering 49 points, 17 rebounds, and 10 assists.
I didn't even think about nothing but just each possession. You know, I was just trying to win each possession, and I didn't think about how many points I had or shot attempts, like, you know, or rebounds, assists. It was more so like, just let me do what I need to do each possession. And that's the approach I always take, and I was able to rack up some points.
Harden played all but 2 minutes, providing 5 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists in his first game since coming out of the series opener in the first minute.
I feel great we won, so that's all that matters. At this point, it's, you know, by any means necessary. As long as there's a W in that column, and, you know, we keep racking up wins, it's all that matters.
Giannis Antetokounmpo had 34 points and 12 boards for the Bucks, who led by 16 at halftime before allowing 71 points over the last two quarters. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Speaking after the game, Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo praised the prolific performance by Kevin Durant.
He's the best player in the world right now, and we gotta beat him as a team. We got to guard him as a team. We got to make him make tough shots like tonight. And we just got to keep doing our job, and hopefully he's going to miss.
Meanwhile, Giannis has joined league most valuable player Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets on the All-NBA first team. Once again, here's Dave Ferry.
Reigning MVP Nikola Jokic is among the list of players named to the All-NBA first team. The Nuggets center averaged 26.4 points, 10.8 rebounds, and 8.3 assists in 72 games during the regular season. He also averaged 29.8 points as Denver advanced to the Western Conference Finals before getting swept by Phoenix. Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo was a unanimous first-team selection. He and Jokic are joined on the first team by Warriors guard Stephen Curry, Mavericks guard Luka Doncic, and Clippers forward Kawhi Leonard. I'm Dave Ferry.
Yo, yo, yo. Sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carollo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evelyn. Prince Nesta had a chance to talk with the official DJ of the NBA's Dallas Mavericks team. She also had the fans moving to the beat at the recent Basketball Africa League tournament in Rwanda. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to DJ Poison Ivy.
My name is Poison Ivy the DJ, or DJ Poison Ivy. I am the official team DJ of the world champion Dallas Mavericks. But for the purposes of this conversation, I am coming to you from Kigali, Rwanda, where I am serving in the same capacity as the sound and music director for the Basketball Africa League. I was born and raised in the greatest place in the world. That is a country known as Kenya. I was born and raised in Nairobi, where I resided until I was about 9 years old before moving to Dallas, Texas in the United States.
You've mentioned rightfully so that right now you're in Rwanda. How is the mood around the Kigali Arena like when you're playing music during the games?
Oh, man. You know, we're Africans. We know how to party. And if it's one thing we definitely know, it's how to have a good time. And that is not restricted to just your traditional parties. That is open to, you know, anywhere where there are beats playing. And that, again, definitely includes the Kigali Arena, you know, a beautiful facility, you know, from the inside out. And has been host to not only the games, but, you know, just a great atmosphere all the way around. You know, you have fans supporting their various respective teams, and, you know, they have their traditions and their chants and their flags and all of that, and you're seeing a lot of that being meshed into now the basketball environment. And, you know, I'm marrying that into what I do. I've made a conceited effort to make sure that while, you know, matches are set where there is a home team, and I say that in quotes, you know, I definitely try to cater to both teams, but also their fan bases. And when I say fan bases, I don't restrict it to just the fan base in the Kigali Arena. It goes without saying that, you know, the BAL is being viewed into over 215 countries around the world. So I also just program the music and sound, understanding that the audience is much larger than the people present in the arena, but it also extends to our viewing audience all around the world as well.
You're also the official Dallas Mavericks DJ.
Yeah, I'm definitely the team DJ, you know, sound director, music coordinator, all that kind of stuff. It all really just means the same thing. Yeah. Those are all just fancy ways of saying that I curate the vibes.
I love it. And, you know, you curate the vibes in style for sure. And so what's the difference like? And, you know, tie that in, because right now we are in the COVID season and things might not be the same. How do you feel when you're playing music at, you know, the Kigali Arena? At the same time, how is it different from, you know, the mood and atmosphere during Dallas Mavericks games?
I mean, you know, this has been just an interesting year or two period. You know, I went from, you know, I remember March 11th, 2020. Ironically, on March 15th, I was set to leave Dallas and head to Senegal, where we would have been making our first stop or our opening stop, so to speak, of the BAL season launch. Well, obviously that came to a screeching halt due to COVID, but I also was in an arena, a fully packed arena, by the way, on that day. I know most of you probably may or may not have seen, but the moment where our VP of basketball communications, Scott Tomlin, walked up to Mark Cuban and showed him the notification. And at the same time, you know, I got my Bleacher Report, ESPN, all of that notification saying that the NBA season was, you know, coming to a halt until further notice. And, you know, that day our building had 20,000 of the most rowdy, loud, and proud fans like we are in Dallas. And then, you know, it was a long time before we went back into play. You know, I opted out of going to the NBA bubble. I opted out of going to the NBA and G League bubbles. But when our season resumed in October, or whenever that was, that we got kind of back to the swing of things, I also went back to DJing an empty arena. So there were no fans and possibly a total of 80 people in the building at the time, including, you know, players and what have you, or maybe it was 80 just staff and personnel just to, you know, keep the building running, so to speak. And then of course, over the course of time, we have slowly allowed fans back into the building. And then I came to Kigali, and obviously, you know, the league is pretty stringent, as they should be, on health and safety protocols. And it was just best that they host, you know, a bubble environment, so to speak, for their players and staff. But, you know, the arena is open to limited seating. And so it's been different. I mean, you know, capacity is different, but the culture is also different, right? Like the fans here are there. They love their home team, just like Mavs fans love their home team. So whether it's, you know, a handful of couple hundred or maybe even, you know, more than that, they're very interactive. They're very responsive and all of that. And then of course, with the, going back to the Mavericks and comparing, contrasting, you know, we slowly have opened up and went from, you know, hosting first responders and healthcare workers and all, you know, first line workers, and having vaccinated, you know, members of those groups join us first as our first fans. And then we've slowly since expanded to allowing, you know, capacity, 25% capacity, 50% capacity. And as of the playoff game on Friday, I think we'll be just a little under 15,000 capacity. So, I mean, I've gone through the whole gamut, literally. I've gone from a full building to an empty building back to a full building. So I think for me, the energy is just that, you know, I'm in Kigali. I get to program these basketball games in full African vibes, regardless of whether there are a handful of fans or if the building is as packed as it can be.
That's DJ Poison Ivy, the official DJ of the NBA's Dallas Mavericks team and the sound and music director for the recent Basketball Africa League tournament in Rwanda. And she spoke with Prince Nesta from Kigali, Rwanda.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
In Olympic news, organizers are making their final preparations for the Tokyo Games, including updated COVID-19 protocols, as we hear now from VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. On Tuesday, Olympic officials unveiled the latest version of guidelines for the upcoming Tokyo Games. Officials launched the so-called playbook at a virtual news conference in Tokyo, where IOC Operations Director Pierre Ducret announced that a COVID-19 liaison officer had been created to offset a possible surge of coronavirus infections.
Every delegation going to the Games will have one or several, depending on the size of the delegation, COVID liaison officers, CLOs, as they are now known to be. And overall, we will have 3,000 CLOs. Their role is to make sure their delegation know what they have to do at the time they have to do it. They will be here making the coordination between the organizers, the different organizations, the government, if need be, the IOC. They really have a critical role to play, and they will be working with us very closely.
IOC Sports Director Christoph Duby says another critical element for the safety of the games is that a high percentage of participants are expected to have received a vaccine.
We could contribute as well at the IOC level for reaching out an agreement to supply 80,000 doses of vaccine, which will allow for 40,000 people to be vaccinated, and they will be very important for the delivery of the games. As you know, from an international standpoint, the athletes and delegations have been very diligent, and we have a very high number, very high percentage of people vaccinated, close to 80%. And the good news is that on the media front, it's looking very good as well, with probably between 70 to 80% of people vaccinated.
According to the new guidelines, the movements of athletes and members of the media will be restricted and monitored for their first 2 weeks in Tokyo. Some 11,000 athletes and 78,000 journalists, officials, and staff are expected at the games, and those who participate must receive 2 negative tests prior to their arrival. Athletes will undergo testing every day, and if the test comes back positive, he or she will receive another test at a fever outpatient clinic in Olympic Village. The strict protocols are in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19, and Pierre Ducret says those who don't respect the rules will be punished.
We expect you to play by the rules, but if you don't, there will be sanctions that could be coming your way. And this is already the case for a number of the stakeholders. We know that every organization is already having its own code of rules that they will implement for their delegation. But in addition to this, should there be infractions such as people really with no compelling reasons not showing up for tests, or intentionally not wearing masks, or not respecting the physical distancing, a number of rules that could be, I would say, disrespected, the means to react. It could go from warnings to temporary or permanent exclusion of the games, withdrawal of the accreditation. We also have the possibility to disqualify with the consequences that are documented in the charter, or to impose financial sanctions. So this range of measures are available to the IOC and the IPC as well.
Tokyo is currently under a strict state of emergency that is scheduled to end on June 20th. However, with less than 40 days to go before the opening ceremony, the Japanese government is considering whether to place Tokyo under a quasi-state of emergency during the Olympic Games. And that is all from me, Sunny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. That wraps up the June 16th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.